Welcome to A World Powerfully Transformed, a new podcast from Unity on Cape Cod. We are creating community, celebrating love, and transforming lives. In this special series, we will bring you exciting, positive spiritual teachings, as well as thought-provoking interviews with guests from a diverse spectrum of the greater community. Now let us join Reverend Tony for this week's presentation.
Welcome to the Unity on Cape Cod podcast. I'm Reverend Tony Cryer, the spiritual leader here at Unity on Cape Cod. We are part of Unity Worldwide Ministries, which has a vision of a world powerfully transformed by the growing movement of our shared spiritual awakening. Each week, I will be bringing you special guests, and we'll be talking about current issues and topics that are impacting our lives and how we can take a spiritual approach to transforming our world. So welcome. Come on in. Welcome back, everyone. So glad you joined us this morning. This week, we have a very special guest with us. It's actually my wife, Liliana Bejarano Cryer, who's a mindfulness instructor. She's an author, a teacher of A Course in Miracles. She works locally for the organization Calmer Choice. And I have to mention, she inspired me to create this podcast. It was based on our monthly blog, which I write every month for Unity on Cape Cod. And she said, you have to put that in a podcast. And she actually had me listen to Michelle Obama's podcast. And guess who was Michelle's first guest? Her husband, former President Barack Obama. So if Michelle can interview her husband, I can interview my wife. So welcome, Lily.
Thank you, Tony. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, and we're so happy to have you. Lily, you just published a new book, just came out last week. Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's a children's book. It's the first in a series that explores emotion in children and gives tools in how to regulate those emotions by using mindful awareness.
Excellent. And what's the book called?
The book is called Sky the Skunk is Not Invited to the Party.
Sky the Skunk is Not Invited to the Party. And you said it's a first in a series of books?
Yes. So I have two more books written already, and I'm planning a new one where we will be exploring topics like anxiety, fear. Mm-hmm. The first one was anger, and how can we handle it? How children can find within themselves the tools to self-regulate.
That's incredible. So we're looking at some pretty big things, emotions like anxiety, fear, and anger. I think we all can benefit from regulating those emotions.
Absolutely, because we all are under a big amount of pressure, and children too. So if we start at a younger age, it will be much better that when we get to an older age, we can self-regulate better.
That's incredible. So you're not only an author of children's books, you have a book out that's been out for a few years now for adults. What's that called?
Yes, I wrote this book about 4 or 5 years ago. It's called Finding Healing at the End of Arrogance.
Oh my, wait a minute. Stop right there. That's a great title. Yes. Finding Healing at the End of Arrogance.
Yes. And I wrote that book when I started my spiritual journey back in Colombia, when I studied Course in Miracles, which is a spiritual book. And I just started to reflect on some episodes of my life or some stories of close friends of mine. Of course, all the names have been changed in the stories.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a series of reflections of why are we here? Why are we perhaps suffering so much? And is there a way out?
Wow. Is there a way out of our suffering? And I've read the book, of course, and I find it fascinating that there are real stories about real people who have had dramatic changes, released from their suffering through the practice, the actual practice of forgiveness.
Yes. Yeah, so throughout all the stories, it was a common denominator, and it's a those people were able to bring healing to their lives when they were practicing forgiveness.
Excellent.
And it wasn't a forgiveness that when I feel that I'm superior to you and I'm giving you a favor, so okay, I'll forgive you. It was something much more deeper. It's when somebody realizes that I just can't keep hurting myself with this grievance. And I just willingly let it go. So the first person that's going to benefit about forgiveness is going to be myself.
Right. And you're releasing all those pent-up emotions of fear, anxiety, and anger you may have been carrying since you were a child.
Absolutely. Yes.
So that brings me back to mindfulness, how we can help children through the practice of mindfulness. How does your book address some of those issues?
Well, when we are able to notice those emotions, we have a bigger chance to release them. We can notice what are we experiencing in this moment. And there is nothing wrong with whatever emotion we are experiencing. So if I feel angry, I acknowledge that anger. And I perhaps explore it. How does that feel in my body? Do I feel it? Where? In my stomach, in my head, in my hands, where? So all the stories are aimed for children to notice and realize where do they feel their emotions. So instead of pushing them away, they acknowledge them and being able in this way to give the rhythm of an emotion to stay in or go.
Okay, so about a month ago, we had Fiona Jensen, who is the executive director of Karma Choice, the organization that you work with in bringing these practices of mindfulness for children into the schools. And she mentioned some of the exercises of looking at the emotions that children have and feeling what they're actually feeling in that moment and making a, like the name of the organization, making a calmer choice. So what I'm looking at is a lot of adults are making choices based on anger, fear, and anxiety. They're reacting
right, rather
than responding. So do you believe that we can cultivate this starting in very early on, this idea of responding from an authentic feeling inside of us rather than a dramatic response of anger and fear and anxiety?
Yes, absolutely. And it's something that we can learn. It's something that we can train for. Because everything starts in our brain. So we have this amygdala that is part of the alarm system to keep us safe, where it's looking for dangers all over. So if the amygdala gets triggered, we are going to get into the flight, fight, or freeze mode. And I'm going to react as if everything around me was a physical threat. And I'm going to experience in my body all the elements that it will help me to escape from danger. But what happens is when I'm into that mode, the prefrontal cortex, which is the part of the brain that it helps me to think it clearly, to make good decisions, it shuts off. So I end up reacting to anything, to a little thing, as if it was a death threat, and I overreact. So what we do with mindfulness is creating this or practicing these exercises to help us recover our prefrontal cortex.
Wow, that's incredible. So I know that there's been studies done on the effects of mindfulness on children and adults who practice. And when you practice this, you're saying that there's actually a part of the brain that begins to function it more than the other, like maybe the amygdala starts to shut down and the prefrontal cortex takes over? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so the thing is that both can't be engaged at the same time. So if I'm in the, let's say, amygdala mode, like if I'm defending, attacking, or I'm freezing, I won't be able to think clearly.
Okay.
So we have found that with mindfulness, we can help ourselves to recover the access to the prefrontal cortex. Something as simple as a pause, take a breath, is going to help us to notice what is happening around us with all our senses that is going to help us to acknowledge perhaps what is the emotion, identify and acknowledge the emotion that we are feeling in a moment that is going to help us to self-regulate.
That's incredible. So thinking clearly is certainly something I feel most of us adults need in this day and age when there's so much information designed to ignite that amygdala, that fight or flight response.
Yes, exactly. So this amygdala and all these stress responses is the name of this response. It worked incredibly in the time of the cavewoman, when we have to hide from the bear or the tiger. But nowadays we are not living among tigers and bears, but perhaps we turn on the news and we think that we are in a very dangerous positions, and our amygdala fires off.
Right, right. So these little things become life or death decisions, and we get very intense about our reaction to things.
Right, and because our brain actually doesn't recognize the difference between a physical threat or a psychological threat, it's going to respond the same. So it's going to send all these hormones in our body that is going to prepare us to fight or flight, all the cortisol and then
all those chemicals start firing off.
Yes, and my heartbeat gets faster and my breath gets shallow because I'm actually getting ready to fight. But what am I doing? I'm just sitting in front of the TV, but I am still bombarded by those hormones that over the time, if the system doesn't reset completely, can become toxic and become nocive.
It's dangerous to your health, you're saying?
Yes.
Oh, caustic. Toxic chemicals building up in your system.
Yes, over time.
Right. Well, I've always heard that anger creates disease in the body. And I do believe that because over time you're sending physically, scientifically, this can be proven, you're sending a lot of chemicals, and storing up that energy. So if you're always stressed out, it really affects you, not just the people around you.
Yes, and this, exactly the same response happened in children as they are growing up. Under a lot of stress.
Yes.
As well.
You work in the schools, so you see the stress that these kids are experiencing.
Yes. Yes. Well, right in this moment, we can't go to the schools due to the pandemic, but I worked with children for the last 3 years, and we were in all the local school systems on Cape Cod.
So I think moving forward, do you see mindfulness as a really important part of growing up? It should be in every school system in our country?
Well, it's definitely something that gives you tools to handle, to navigate your emotions, to self-regulate. So I will think that it would be something that children can benefit from.
Mm-hmm. So that's amazing. So getting back to your book for a second, this is the first in a series dealing with many different emotions.
Right.
And having seen the book, I can see that you're using animal characters.
Yes.
You put them in situations that children might encounter, like Guy the Skunk's not invited to the party, and so he feels left out.
Right.
And that's a situation that I think all children at some point experience. So how do you see moving forward from a pandemic? I mean, this is a huge amount of stress in our society now. How do you see the practice of mindfulness helping children recover from this incredible stressful situation?
Yes, it is not the only tool, but certainly it's a big tool that they can use. They can just stop and find some strategies that they can use. For example, we teach them different ways of breathing, fun ways to breathe, the hot chocolate breathing, and the hot air balloon breathing. So we give them, we present mindfulness as a game as well. Something
oh,
that they engage with curiosity and,
yes.
and kindness.
Awesome. And so you make it fun.
Yes, we make it fun. We work with the books, with the stories that they can relate.
That's excellent.
We play videos also.
And so what's your vision for your book? How do you see it impacting our society as a whole, perhaps?
Well, wow, that's quite a question. Well, I will see not only this book, but the series of books, just giving them some tools for them to navigate all the stress that they are facing right now. And it's starting to build, little by little, a healthier response where they don't get easily attached to a point of view, but they are able to see different perspectives where they can notice what they are noticing that moment without judging, and just increasing the quality of their lives.
That's incredible. No, I think you mean children who are growing up in this time, in this society, in this day and age. Because I see that as adults, we're not being extremely positive role models in letting go of our points of view and letting go.
Right.
I love the book Healing at the End of Arrogance, because holding on to your point of view does develop arrogance, I feel. Our arrogance comes from holding on to our point of view and not accepting others' viewpoints into our consciousness. And if we start early on, you're saying that perhaps we won't have a lot of these problems later on in our adult life?
Yes, it's creating a consciousness where I know that everybody's opinion, it's valid depending on the perspective. So we teach how to practice perspective also as part of our curriculum. And absolutely, because if we are all fixed up with an idea, we won't be able to have empathy or to see the things from the other person's point of view. We won't be able to understand that the other person's perspective comes from their experiences in life. And mine can be different, and that doesn't mean that it's wrong. They are just different. So we can cultivate empathy as well.
That's incredible. That's, I think, a long-forgotten emotion in our country sometimes, that we forget to empathy, I think, is feeling what the other person feels. Not just seeing their point of view and saying that's a valid point of view from where they stand, but putting yourself in another person's shoes.
Right. It's acknowledging that all of us are human and all of us want the same. All of us want to be happy and feel safe, no matter where you are in this planet.
Yeah.
We all want the same thing.
We all want the same thing. And I feel that empathy also allows you to see that other people's needs are not only just as valid as your needs, but they are your needs. They're just as important to fill for your happiness. Because I know I'll never be happy as long as I know there are other people starving in the world and encountering hardships that are so preventable.
Right. So perspective is one of the pillars also of a mindful awareness.
And we could be looking at the same thing and seeing it from different angles, but it's still the same thing. I remember the photo of two people looking at a number that's drawn in front of them, and one person sees a 6, and the person on the other side, of course, sees a 9.
Right.
And they're standing there yelling at each other, 6, 9, 6, 9. And it's the same number.
Yes.
It's the same symbol. But they're seeing it from opposite sides.
Yes, yes. We have shown those kind of images to children just to make them realize that things can be, we can be looking at the same thing but have different points of view just because you are looking at from a different perspective.
It doesn't make the other person wrong.
That doesn't
just
make
because
the other person wrong.
You're seeing it from your perspective.
Yeah. Yes.
That's excellent. I wish that I were taught some of that in school. I've had to do a lot of healing and find the end of arrogance over and over again because I was taught competition. I was taught to be better than the other person, to strive to be better than other people, and that was our model of success when I was growing up. And I think perhaps we need to cultivate a new model of success based on understanding and empathy and cooperation. Would you agree that mindfulness, especially beginning early on with children, is going to help develop those qualities?
Yes, I will think so. Some studies have shown that physically, that part of the brain that I was telling you, the amygdala, it shrinks. And the prefrontal cortex gets bigger. That means that our capacity for reasoning, to have a clear mind, it's going to improve.
Oh, nice. I love it. So we're not stuck where we seem to be right now. We can learn and grow, and we actually are. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes, we are. We are definitely working towards, not to say towards a place where we can become more empathic and compassionate.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. So developing our compassion actually involves neuroplasticity and developing that part of our brain the prefrontal cortex that's in charge of those things like compassion, empathy, clear thinking, focus, intention.
Yes, because it's like opening up to hear, to listen, to really listen to the other person. We talk about mindful listening,
mm-hmm.
and it's not the opposite. The mindless listening is just being in front of you and not paying attention at all to what you are saying. So with mindful listening, we are just staying there without interrupt, without thinking that I have to solve something, just listening to what the person is telling me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our Buddhist leader, James Kirshner, said that was really important in their practice, is mindful listening, really listening deeply to the other person, not thinking about what you're going to say next, but really listening to what they have to say, not even thinking that you're going to respond, just accepting what's being offered in that moment.
Right, because this is not new, so mindful listening has been practiced for thousands of years in many traditions. So it's important to say here that what we teach is not Buddhism, but tools like mindful listening can be practiced in a secular way for everyone.
Exactly. The reason I mentioned that is because listening is not a religious practice. It's just something we can do
right.
as human beings.
Yes.
And I think it goes to say that perhaps we just need to be more kind with one another and more attentive to each other as yes. we move on. What I hear you saying, Lily, is something very important to me. It's called conscious evolution. So we're okay. making a choice to do certain things which can not only evolve our spiritual connection, but really evolve our brains, evolve our capacity, real capacity for empathy and compassion and kindness.
Right. Yes, it's something that we can cultivate.
Awesome. So I love it because these are the intersecting points for me between science and spirituality that really make a lot of sense. It makes sense that we're not going to be able to practice a true spiritual path without conscious connection with each other. That we cannot have a kind society if we don't have a spiritual connection to everything else. So it's like if we separate our humanity from our spirituality, we're never going to really I won't say we'll never evolve, but it's going to be a lot slower, I feel, in that sense.
Right. And in this moment, I'm not talking about calmer choice instructor, but referring to my spiritual practice,
yes.
I understand perfectly what you were saying. And that spiritual platform has given me the opportunity to, let's say, to recover my inner peace and somehow being able to communicate, to transfer with them. With my words, my actions,
mm-hmm.
to people around me.
Absolutely, and I mean these ideas are actually just fundamental good practice. The Christian idea where that might come from is where in I was reading the other day in Paul's letter to the Romans, he was saying that we are all one body. We are many members, but we don't all have the same function. We're all different, and we all need to accept that we are part of one body. He says the body of Christ. I don't want to get too religious, but as a human family, we are all part of this one body of humanity. And so each person is just as valuable as I am, and their opinions and perspectives and their feelings are all just as valuable as mine.
Right.
So do you think that, getting back to this idea of empathy, that if we can see another person's interests as just as valuable as our own, that we're going to take a big step here?
Absolutely. It's coming back again to that humanity. It's your basic needs are the basic needs of everyone around the world.
Mm-hmm.
To have a shelter, to have food, to feel safe.
Mm.
So everyone is going to strive to have what they need to be happy, to be safe, no matter what the place in the world where they live, or their race, or their gender. All of that is irrelevant. As human, as core, we all want the same. We all need the same.
Yes, to love and to be loved.
Love
finally,
and to be loved.
I think that's the basic necessity of every human being. And I'm so grateful for your books and for your practice, your spiritual practice. Is it's so close to my life, and you are a great influence on me. Just wanted everybody to know that. And that we all can benefit from really owning our emotions and attempting to practice forgiveness, to regulate our own emotions, and to help our children to do the same so that they grow up in an environment of empathy, cooperation, acceptance of themselves. That, like you said, they want to feel happy and safe and cherished. And we learn to cherish one another when we're not defending all of our emotions, when we're not stuck in anger, fear, and anxiety. So I'm grateful for your work, Lily. And
thank you.
If I think we need more of this in the world, and if we can continue to practice forgiveness as adults and help our kids be mindful as children, we can really come to the end of our arrogance. I really feel that. I really feel that this is conscious evolution, that I am making a choice to see my neighbor and love my neighbor as myself, as Jesus would ask us to do.
Right. Well, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak about this and about my books.
Yes, absolutely. So how can we get a copy of Sky the Skunk is Not Invited to the Party?
Well, it's up on Amazon. You just can order in any part of the United States, I believe a few countries in Europe, and the Spanish version just came on yesterday.
Yesterday, fantastic.
Yeah,
so it's available in English and in Spanish.
Available in English and in Spanish.
It's Sky the Skunk is Not Invited to the Party.
Yes.
It's part of a book series, Sky the Skunk and Friends.
Right.
A Mindful Adventure.
Mindful Awareness in Spanish is called El Zorrillo Cielo No Es Invitado a la Fiesta.
All right. So we look forward to many more books from you, Lily. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Tony.
And we love you. We bless you. We see the Christ in you. And of course, we accept you just the way you are.
Wow. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, each and every one, for tuning in to this special edition of A World Powerfully Transformed, a Unity on Cape Cod podcast. If you would like to support this program or find out more about Unity on Cape Cod and our Sunday services, please visit our website, unityoncapecod.org, or stop by our spiritual center at 147 Walton Ave in Hyannis, Mass. We would love to get to know you. Be blessed and remember to be a blessing. This podcast was made possible in part through a grant from Unity Worldwide Ministries and the Templeton Foundation.